The Mary Trump Show with the Nerd Avengers is hitting the road. Yes, we're going to be live on May 7th at the House of Blues in Chicago, Illinois, May 9th at Cobb's Comedy Club in San Francisco, California, May 10th at the Aladdin Theater in Portland, Oregon, and on May 16th in my hometown, the Gramercy Theater in New York City. I really, really hope to see you at one of those shows. It is going to be amazing. To get your tickets, just go to politicon.com/tour. There are not enough days between now and the 2024 presidential election, or maybe there are too many. I don't know, Danielle. I just kind of want to get this over with. I sort of want to start with, you know, the assessment, which I think all of us share at this point. Donald's not the problem. And, you know, to a large extent, obviously, Republican voters are the problem. Because they continue to empower these people, but they get sold a particular message, right? And they get their message in a very skewed way. And just, you know, the events of the last 2 weeks between, and we talked about this part last week, you know, the way with one lie on Truth Social, Donald took over countless media cycles, which was just such a disgrace, and then was given the opportunity and a bigger platform to call for, in both racist and anti-Semitic terms, call for violence against the New York DA, Alvin Bragg, which came to fruition in an envelope full of white powder. And guys, yes, it's really good that there was no poisonous substance in there, but it still happened. And it's a sign of things to come. And if that doesn't send chills down your spine, you're not taking this seriously enough. And then, of course, the Nazi rally in Waco. And let's please stop pretending that that's not what it was. I mean, you know, Ruth Ben-Ghiat wrote a great piece in her Substack Lucid about how it was literally echoing Hitler's Nuremberg rally with the plane circling. And you know, it's just, this is not a drill. And I think we need to start calling out Republicans, elected Republicans, because it seems like no matter how extreme Donald's behavior and rhetoric get, we get the same responses. Their reactions boil down to three general categories. Either they pretend they don't know what you're talking about, mm-hmm. because they don't follow everything Donald Trump says on social media, you know, and even when it's explained to them or the quote is given to them, they then pretend that they have a meeting. The second one is a very, very muted admonition that he just shouldn't do these things. And then finally, you have wholehearted support of the most vile things he says and threats he makes. So it's elected Republicans who are driving this bus, I think, at this point, Danielle. So what to you were sort of were the trends we really need to be paying attention to that upon which a spotlight was shone over the last week or two?
I mean, you know, I was watching Deadline White House yesterday, and John Hillman, I think is his name, from the circus. He's an MSNBC. Yeah, he's a MSNBC analyst, and he was at the rally. And the things that I didn't realize was one, that many of Trump's advisors, right, these people that are in his inner circle, have ties to Waco, have ties to cultish, pseudo-religious cult that was a part of Waco. And so when you decide, and what was said too, is that Waco, by the way, is not the largest city to go to in Texas, right? There's only one, and when people were, when asked, who's, oh, I didn't know, oh, this, that's not what this was. It's like, we're not fucking dumb, right? And I really wish, you know, to all of the points that you're making, Mary, is that beyond gun violence, beyond mass shootings, beyond school shootings and all of these things, we are living in the most dangerous times. And when Donald Trump can hold a rally that invokes several things, fascism, religiosity, when he is saying that I am your retribution, when he in his broke ass Twitter on Truth Social said that Alvin Bragg is working with Antichrist and working on behalf of the devil. Donald Trump is working overtime to turn himself into a cult leader and a religious martyr. If they are coming for me, they are going to come for you. And what he is invoking the religiosity, right, is sending a bullhorn message to these people that Donald Trump's fight isn't about the fact that he fucked a porn star when he was married. It isn't about the fact that he's a grifting piece of trash, right? And it's taken advantage of everyone and everything everywhere. Find me 11,700 and some odd votes, though. Find me this, find me that. It's not even that. It's that he's turning this into a religious war. These people are fighting for the future of America. They are patriots. They are the good ones. You know, Jesus is coming, and it's Jesus is on our side because their Jesus carries an AR-15 and looks like the Hulk. I mean, these are the images that go out on this Truth Social, that go out in this sphere. And so by him using these words and charging them with a white evangelical backing, we should all open up our eyes. And I mean, we all in the media, mm-hmm. and recognize this is not a fucking joke. This isn't the circus anymore. This isn't the clown car. And as was said before, the dry run was 2016. Donald Trump gets back into the White House. Any Republican, including fucking little fascist Ron DeSantis, gets into the White House. They mm-hmm. know where all the levers are. Absolutely. They know where all the keys are headed. They are coming for everything and everyone.
Yeah.
Right. And they're backing themselves up with the Lord.
Right. And I think part of that mission is the delusion. You know, we, as you mentioned, we see it with the images that are posted of him with just this massive superhero physique and pushing this apocalyptic anti-government message when he was the government for 4 years, first of all. And secondly, he's probably the most irreligious person on the planet, you know, so he's selling a bill of goods that he doesn't even believe in. Not that that's anything new for him, but somebody on his team understands the power of tapping into white evangelical intolerance. Dahlia, it's one of the things that I found most horrifying about Waco is that it was allowed to happen. And that's, to me, a fundamental problem. This guy is facing 4 criminal cases. He's, you know, in the middle of 4 serious criminal cases. As far as we can tell, they're quite advanced. And a judge in a civil trial ruled that the jury would be anonymous because Donald has such a record of attacking and attacking jurors, witness tampering, et cetera, that he cannot be trusted not to do the same. And 3 days before the rally, he was putting out death threats on Alvin Bragg, one of which was so serious that it was being investigated by the FBI. So sure, let's let him go to Waco, Texas, with all of the symbolism available. And by the way, people who are watching, when we object to his presence at Waco, we, nobody is saying what happened in Waco was cool. You know, nobody's saying that that tragedy was okay, that it was, you know, wonderful that the FBI killed dozens of people and many, many children. Nobody's saying that. What we're saying is that allowing this person, of all people, to tap into the white supremacist ideology and the white supremacist hagiography around David Koresh and Waco is just upping the stakes for the next slightly more than year and a half.
I mean, a couple things, and apologies for my incredibly dark, moody Boston hotel room.
I like it. I think
it's right. It's suitably apocalyptic.
Yeah.
A couple things, Mary. One, I mean, you know, he's allowed to go because there's no stopping him, right? We have a First Amendment. He's running for office until and unless the justice system stops him from doing things. He can do what he wants. I think that, you know, one of the pieces of symbolism you skated over, but let's say it out loud, around Waco is another godlike child sex predator whose followers thought he could do nothing wrong. So the symbolism doesn't escape. Just connecting what Danielle said, you know, this is very, it's not just about white supremacy and anti-government, you know, vigilante movements. It's also like an ongoing problem in this country of, you know, people who are allowed to do whatever they want under the guise of being quasi-religious figures. And that's just, you know, and people who somehow reward that. And then the fact that we don't have systems of accountability. And again, not that anything that happened there is okay, but I think the symbolism runs really deep beyond just, you know, white supremacists and anti-government sentiment. The other thing that I think is just so interesting is that when you read the mealy-mouthed disavowals that come out of like the Lindsey Grahams of the world, it's that same trope of like, let's not focus on the past. Let's like focus on the future, right? I mean, time and time again, it's like, oh, it's bad political judgment for Donald Trump to focus on the January 6th insurrectionists. Like, not that it's on some lofty moral principle a bad idea to do a sing-along with them, but like, let's just focus on the future. And what it reminds me of is how much it chimes with the both of the impeachment hearings, when what we heard in defense of Donald Trump was like, oh, that was in the past. Like, let's move on, right? Like, let's move on from those unfortunate events of January 6th. Let's move on from the unfortunate attempts to, you know, involve Ukraine in the upcoming election. And I just think it's such a uniquely American zeitgeist to say the past doesn't matter, because the past is the future. And as both of you are saying right now, to ignore what's happened in the past, to have no accountability for the past, right? This is all the knock on Alvin Bragg, is like, how dare he investigate, you know, these crimes that happened years and years ago? Like, can't we just put it all behind us? And it's like, no, the reason that we have to investigate and prosecute what has happened is exactly because it's going to happen again, but like worse and bigger every time. And so I just don't know why we let the Lindsey Grahams of the world skate with these quasi disavowals that are A, purely strategic, and B, seem to somehow dismiss catastrophic wrongdoing of the past as immaterial to what's coming next.
Yeah. And there's a lot there. So I'm laughing because I'm overwhelmed with the it's also predictable, you know, and it's nothing. None of this is new. And it's exactly, Dahlia, because as you just said, we keep letting the same shit happen because we don't deal with the old stuff first. And the Donald's impunity is based purely on the impunity of those who came before him, whether it's George W. Bush or Ronald Reagan or Richard Nixon or Robert E. fucking Lee, for God's sakes. I just want to tease one thing out. It's David Koresh, for those of you who don't know, was also a man who raped children. And that was part of the deal with the cult. I mean, that he was, as their supreme leader, he was allowed to do this. And it was done in the context of this, as you said, quasi-religion. But I also see that there are other... I mean, there are so many ways in which, on the right, children are seen as there to be exploited. And even outside of the context of religion, although that is one of the most dangerous contexts, but we see it with their willingness to repeal child labor laws. We see it with their, not just willingness anymore, but I think they are absolutely fine. And maybe they even think it's a good thing that our school children keep getting slaughtered with guns. I don't know how else to say it. It's not even reluctance anymore. It's like, yeah, well, you know, there are only three this time. Good for us. Only single digits. So the extremism is just spreading out in every single direction, which should and does worry us. I don't know if it sufficiently worries other people. And yes, Jen, as the great William Faulkner wrote, and as you agree with me, the greatest, one of the two greatest American novelists, he and Toni Morrison are tied, in my opinion. The past is not dead. It's not even past. And I don't know, though. I mean, wasn't there... Donald put out a death threat to Alvin Bragg on social media, and somebody took him at his word. And okay, thankfully Alvin Bragg wasn't murdered, but I'm guessing that wasn't a fun day down at the DA's office in New York City. The FBI couldn't have stopped it. The FBI couldn't have said, I'm sorry, these are very troubling things that are happening and we need to keep you here. Like, what? I mean, are we really all just so fucking helpless in the midst of this? And whatever happens is going to happen, I guess. And, you know, as we'll talk about in a little bit, we'll just let this virulent minority keep rigging the system, taking away the rights of the rest of us who don't look or believe or think like they do. And let's just let Donald keep having his Nazi rallies. And we'll see how it plays out in 2024 when the deck has already been stacked.
To quote former President George W. Bush, that was some weird shit.
Jen, before you go on, I just want to, if we had like a little trophy to give people, I would give it to you this week, because for those of you who haven't seen it, Jen Taub selflessly, masochistically, you might say, watched the rally and live tweeted it. I'm telling you, there is not enough Xanax or Valium or vodka or whatever floats your boat. There's not enough of that substance for me to be able to do that. I don't know how you did it, but it was an invaluable service. First of all, how are you?
Well, I just want to say I took it to the next level. My Substack on Monday, every Monday, it's called On the Money. I actually wrote an intro to explain the context, and then took my tweets, and still in chronological order, organized them thematically so they're easy for folks to read. And I just want to hit on some of the points that have already been said. I'm thinking when Dahlia and Danielle were talking about this, but what, and if you look at, by the way, and this is free, you know, you don't have to
You froze.
Today, the article on Monday was called On the Money, What to Know About Waco. I created a montage of images, which tells, I think, the top left corner, there's a picture of Donald Trump at the Waco rally. behind him playing on a giant screen, the attack on the U.S. Capitol. To the right, I mean, so below him is the buildings at Waco on fire, which people have said, you know, regardless of what, how this all began, there's really strong evidence that the members of this cult set fire to the buildings, which then resulted in the deaths. And then you look clockwise, you go to sort of going on the circle. Right there is a police FBI sketch and a photo and a booking photo of Timothy McVeigh, who was at the standoff at Waco. And as you all remember, the buildings and the compound burned down on April 19th. 2 years later, brings you around full circle. Right next to, so if you look at, think of this as a circle, right next to Donald then is a photo of the federal building in Oklahoma City that McVeigh bombed. I mean, and just to be clear, that was, you know, he drove a Ryder truck filled with 2 tons of ammonium nitrate and fuel oil up to the building. The blast was so strong that 168 people there perished, including 19 children. And of course, later, the death penalty was secured. I want to point out, which folks probably know this, but Merrick Garland was working at the Justice Department. He went down there to attend the preliminary hearings for McVeigh and his co-conspirator. Garland supervised to some degree from afar, helped pick the team. Remember, this is in 1995, but when the conviction was secured in 97, 2 years later, he was already a judge. And so what's happening here, if you cannot see all these things come together, but Donald Trump is at this moment clearly aligning his campaign. He's clearly aligning his entire campaign with war against the federal government. He also is directly challenging and attacking Merrick Garland. In fact, unbelievably, he accused him of, you know, somehow appointing, you know, of being corrupt and coming after him, which just goes to show you Merrick Garland was, you know, an idiot for not appointing someone right away. I don't know how these people thought he was stopping after January 6th. This is all a continuation. And as you all said, you know, the Branch Davidians were this apocalyptic religious cult. Donald Trump was sounding pretty fucking apocalyptic himself. And he is announcing not just a campaign, but a siege, a reverse siege on the government. And so, you know, the speech was laced with violence and vengeance, and aligning, as everyone has said, aligning his grievance with everybody else's grievance, apparently. And, you know, we're really in a lot of trouble. And it's incredibly frustrating to me that this is not being focused on. And that, you know, that we've got a lot of people saying, well, as Dahlia pointed out, you know, some of the Republicans are like, well, you know, he really shouldn't be bringing that up now. That's who he is. And also,
wait. You don't think he's learned his lesson?
No, but like, why hasn't he been indicted yet for trying to get the vice president killed? Like, I don't understand what this is going on in this country. Anyway, so I'm kind of like, the past is not dead. It's not even past. The insurrection is not dead. It's not even over. The coup hasn't ended. And guess what? There is no rule of law in America.
There is not. That's chilling, but true. And not, the coup is not just not over. It's getting worse. It's strengthening. Because Donald Trump is not Timothy McVeigh. He's somebody for whom 74 million people cast their vote in 2020. 74 million people.
He wants to lionize McVeigh. He's not McVeigh. He's not Koresh. He's bigger than all of that. And he's calling on everyone else to become Koresh's and McVeigh's for him.
And because he's not a complete idiot, he's not name-checking them. Because, you know, for some people, that would be a bridge too far. But you know what I'm really sick of hearing, Danielle? This whole idea that, you know, some people, and I don't agree with this, but some people are saying the indictments are going to ensure that Donald gets it, gets elected in 2024. No, that is not true. I think it helps him get the nomination for sure, because this is the Republican Party now. But those, I think they're panic stricken. You're right. People who say that are kind of panic stricken, understandably. But a lot of people push back by saying that's so ridiculous. You know, he's energizing the base, but the base is diminished. And, you know, we're all just being so melodramatic. Really? We're being melodramatic. I mean, come on. Because, again, as I alluded to earlier, the Republican Party with a huge assist from the Supreme Court is making sure that the only votes that matter in 2024 are the votes of the Republican base. And there was this, I mean, to say that a Sherrilyn Ifill piece was extraordinary is redundant, but Sherrilyn Ifill wrote a piece last week? 2 days ago. I don't remember precisely what it was, but it's basically about, it's called The Republican Plan to Make Voting Irrelevant. And it is about the various attempts at all levels of government to nullify the will of the people, essentially. So, Danielle, are we overreacting? Are we being melodramatic?
So here's the thing. I was up last night, like couldn't sleep. I went to the dentist last week to find out that I am grinding my teeth at night and have damn near flattened my fucking molars because of stress.
You're stressed?
Here's my thinking is, and this is what kept me up last night, was, and I'm going to say it on here, and I'm going to do several videos about it after. We need a national fucking boycott. Like, Americans, all Americans need to get into the streets. Like, this is the fact that we have a Republican Party that has turned into an unapologetic cult that pledges allegiance to an AR-15 that they proudly replace the American flag with and put on their lapels. The fact that we have members of Congress, sitting members of Congress, that pose with their children with AR-15s that are bigger than they are. The fact that you have a Republican potential nominee who is going to Waco, right? And summoning the Oath Keepers, the 3%ers, the fucking Proud Boys, like every single national white entity and group, the white evangelical Christians, the fact that you had Marjorie Taylor Greene on fucking social media yesterday saying the most transphobic shit that I will not repeat. Donald Trump Jr. saying this most transphobic shit that I will not repeat, right? The fact that then all of this shit happens and we just go to work. We just go to school. We just go about our day like it's fucking normal. And half of us, more than half of us, have breakdowns multiple times a day, right? Our therapy is on the rise in this country. Mental health, suicide, on the rise. Anxiety medication, on the rise. It's just like, I'm tired. I'm tired of people pretending that this shit is normal and that this is just par for the course of what it means to be an American. It's fucking not, yeah. Right? Like, it is absolutely not. And so what do people, we need a national boycott. We need for every single teacher across this country to say, you know what? Fuck you. I'm not going to work until there is a national assault rifle ban. You don't pay me fucking enough. There was a person yesterday who tweeted and said, you want to arm teachers and you don't even trust us to pick out fucking books.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You want to arm teachers and you don't even trust them to decide their own fucking curriculum. Right? Like, you want to talk about how much you love fucking children and the pictures of those little babies on the bus screaming, crying, pressing their hands to the windows yesterday. And that's something that we want to swallow on a regular basis. And you have a Republican Party again, right? You had the NRA, I think it was a Tennessee representative that was on Jose Diaz Balard's show this morning that said that he got phone calls from the NRA last night saying, remember, remember who you vote with. Remember how you align. Like, this is absolutely fucking crazy. I'm telling you, as Americans, all of us, all stripes, all forms, all people, gun owners, non-gun owners, people need to walk out. Like, it's time that we put the capitalistic machine to a fucking halt.
Yeah, I've also been shocked that the American Medical Association and doctors haven't done something similar when it comes to protesting hospitals that put legal opinion above a medical opinion and, you know, don't provide medical services because they're afraid of being sued. I mean, this is insanity. And Dahlia, I think I just said on a personal note, there are two things that I don't talk a lot about, climate change and gun violence, because I find both things unbearable. I know that's I should talk about them more, but you know, there's only so much one human being can take, and I think we all have to put up our own boundaries, but largely because when I sort of love the planet, but I love children, and both of those things impact children more than they impact anybody else. And anyway, but beyond that, I think, Dahlia, what the right does really well is use our humanity against us. In other words, a lot of us have been traumatized by the Trump administration and then COVID. Whereas both of those things, the first one energized them because they were getting everything they wanted. And the second one, they just pretended it didn't exist. And much like gun violence against children, they didn't give a shit that a lot of people, even people they love, were dropping dead because, I don't know, freedom or something. And they kind of have used that to their advantage, where the rest of us, as Danielle pointed out, are suffering from increased levels of depression and anxiety and PTSD. And you can only imagine the rates of domestic violence that have gone up, or for serious psychiatric illnesses, et cetera. And there's been no real coordinated governmental response to help the mental health crisis. And then in addition, what they do is, in various and slimy and quite clever ways, unravel democracy that doesn't get attention. And in Sherrilyn Ifill's piece, she laid out the depth and breadth of this project. So if you want to talk about that a little bit, because it's, people paid attention when Mitch McConnell did what he did with the Supreme Court, but nobody did anything about it. This is my theory, because it was Merrick Garland, not Ketanji Jackson. I think we would have had a very different response on the left if it hadn't been some mediocre white guy. Then as soon as, what's his name, Gorsuch was put in, it was all normalized again. But there are other things going on at the state level that should have us not more worried, but just as worried.
So a couple things. One, just in response to what Danielle said about a strike, I want to just point out that somewhere between 7% and 8% of Israelis were on the streets, especially after the firing of Defense Minister Gallant, which was Israel's version, right? The Sunday night massacre. You need, what do the experts on authoritarianism say? 3.74% of the population to be on the streets. Mm-hmm. And what happened yesterday that backed Bibi Netanyahu and his insane coalition of clown cars down off, like ramming this judicial reform, quote unquote, bill through that's going to end the Supreme Court in Israel as something that protects minority rights. The thing that backed him down was the general strike, right? Was the fact that, you know, the hospitals, the airport was closed, the banks were closed, shopping malls were closed, everything was closed yesterday, and he blinked. And I want to be really clear about one thing, which is in the deal that was done with Ben-Gvir, the clowniest of the clown cars, he now gets his own personal militia. This guy was too crazy to serve in the army, and he's going to get authorization to have his own personal militia. That's the deal. So we cannot say that Bibi Netanyahu blinking yesterday preserves the rule of law. But it certainly was, I think, emblematic of what Danielle's saying, which is people need to give a shit. They need to be on the streets, and they need to say all the universities are closed and all the hotels are on like life support and the shopping malls are closed. And I'm super sorry you can't catch your plane today. That's what did it.
Yeah. Can I, before you go on to the next point, I just want to pause for a second and point out that because those protests were so effective, Netanyahu actually said, I'm paraphrasing, if there can still be a dialogue to avoid a civil war, I will engage in the dialogue. So he is recognizing the seriousness of what his country is dealing with, the brink they're at. And we are not doing that here. We are not even close to doing that here. And I think, Dahlia, as you pointed out, like, we can't even get 1% of Americans to give a shit about anything. So, you know, it makes it a little bit easier to, or I shouldn't say give a shit, I should, you know, to come out and actively protest this for various reasons. But while they seem not to be paying attention, the Republicans are going ahead and changing the rules at every possible opportunity.
One quick rejoinder in tribute to Danielle's broken molars and my own, which is, you know, one of the things I've been hearing from people, I'd be curious if the three of you have heard the same since 2016, is I'm so glad you're paying attention so I don't have to. Like, I am so grateful for people in the media who, like, you know, spend 14 hours a day doing this because it means that I can like get to Target. And I just think I hear it so frequently. So yeah, I'm hearing, at least in our private chat, you all are hearing this too. But I think that like we are so incredibly good at sort of saying like, I'm going to farm this out to specialists, that we're the hysteria specialists, right? We do hysteria so you don't have to. And that's why I have no molars either. But I think until we get better at this notion of like, oh, I also have to be on the streets. Like, it's not good enough for Danielle to be doing 52 podcasts a day. Like, this is just where we are. And so I just think like that, I don't know what to make of that, but I'm sharing it. Okay, on to Sherrilyn Ifill's article. I will say I think it's one of the single most important things we've published at Slate. And like, big props to Jeremy Stahl, our legal editor, who worked really hard on it. And what she does, Mary, is exactly what you said. She lays out that underneath what we think is, you know, all the you know, democracy is holding, the system is holding, and, you know, we had an aberrant moment on January 6th, but everything is functioning. And she just describes the systematic kneecapping, in this case, of prosecutors around the country. Unsurprisingly, largely Black prosecutors, mm-hmm. right? This is not defense
so weird.
Prosecutors making it impossible for them to do their jobs. And she begins and ends, and I think this is so important because you mentioned Mitch McConnell, with Mitch McConnell, who, you know, has been ailing the last couple of years, who has ensured that the governor of Kentucky cannot replace him if something happens to him with somebody of his own choosing, right? 35 states allow unfettered. The governor is able to replace somebody who cannot do their job. But McConnell's made sure that the Republicans are going to vet if something happens to him. And this is sort of emblematic of, and I just want to commend one other piece and then I'll stop. But Abigail Tracy has an incredible piece in Vanity Fair, January 30th, 2023, where she also describes systemically around the country, Republican legislatures stripping the government of its power, stripping elected officials of their powers, whether it's taking away Supreme Court prerogatives to do things, taking away governor's ability to do things, taking away, as Sherilyn says, prosecutor, you know, there's a bill in Georgia that's supposed to be able to keep Fani Willis from doing her job. Yep. And it's completely dubious. It's unclear that you can do this, but this effort to say you have been elected, the system worked, and now we are going to make sure, right? We're seeing it in Kansas too around abortion. We're going to make sure that having been elected, you can't do your job is just another form of vote suppression. It's another form of minority rule. And I think that what Sherilyn is saying, and I'll end here, is that there should be an outcry in the legal community about this, just as you just said. There, why is there no outcry in the medical community? Why are we not hearing an outcry around protecting teachers or election workers? By the same token, every lawyer in the country should be on fire when elected legal officials are stripped of their authority to do their job, chiefly because, well, they're Black, but because their values do not align with the gerrymandered Republican legislatures. And so this is something that is happening around the country. And God bless Sherilyn Ifill for sending up a flare.
Yeah. And you alluded to what Republican-led state legislatures do to incoming Democratic governors. And that's why things like the Supreme Court, the Wisconsin State Supreme Court race, which is happening imminently, the word that actually means very soon, just for those of you who have stopped paying attention to
wait. Mary, did that, is this just what you're saying, or did someone say that? I'm just seeing the word imminently, and I suddenly was like, wait, I got confused.
I know, because we don't know what it means anymore. So let me rephrase. The Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court election in Wisconsin is happening, I think, on April 14th, if that's a Tuesday.
I guess that's imminent.
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah, reasonably imminent. Jen. I can never remember what it's called, but this, I don't know if it's legislation even, but this idea that Donald has that if he got in again, he would basically fire the entire civil service. And, you know, 90%, at least 90% of civil servants in America are nonpartisan. They just do their fucking jobs. They have institutional memory. That's how the government functions properly. He's going to get rid of all of them and replace them with hacks, replace them with sycophants. Hello, that's kind of important. I think that's something we should also be paying attention to. So, Jen, there's just the idea that people... and Dahlia, you know, yes, we have all heard this. Thank you for being outraged on my behalf. So I can go to the spa, whatever, go get my pedicure. I kind of thought that we all do what we do. You know, we each have our own version of fighting the good fight and hope and making sure to the extent that we can that American democracy prevails so that it can eventually become a real democracy. And fascism is, you know, trounced into the mud. But I think part of that project is kind of helping other people find their outrage, not giving them a chance to just chill. So what do you do with that?
Yeah, I mean, I do think I help people find their outrage. At least people often say that's like what the blurbs on my book say, like, you know, that it's, you know, blood boiling or don't read if you aren't on hard medication. But I, but that doesn't necessarily get people, you know, 3.5, 3.7% of the people in the street, you know? And so I'm not sure. it's like this, it just reminds me, like, you know, the slow moving train, or right, like, it, like, I just remember right after Donald was elected in 2016, I remember, like, and I think I've said this a million times because it's so in my mind, that I was reminded of these documentaries about the Dust Bowl, where everyone was like, well, it's coming, because we didn't, you know, we just plowed everything down. And it's like, the Dust Bowl is still coming. Like, you know, maybe we had a good rain, you know, like rain, not rain, R-A-I-N, but still, you know, for 4 years, but the Dust Bowl is on its way again. And we didn't do enough to fertilize democracy. We still have, you know, the destruction and the tumbleweed and the devastation coming, unless people do something about it. And the problem, though, is I don't know what people should do, because people aren't going to show up in the streets. And even if they do, like, you hear the people, the analogy here is all the people on television after the shooting in Tennessee saying, well, I hope, like, looking at the camera, there was a woman saying, I hope you all do something. I hope our politicians, and they just fucking won't. They just won't. And to me, that's a failure of democracy. And so if we can't even get reasonable gun legislation done, and we can't even convince the Attorney General of the United States that he should have, like, actually enforced the law against someone who tried to stage a coup and kill the vice president, what should people do? I mean, I am outraged because I can't help it. But if I get everyone else outraged, what are they going to do, Mary? Because I don't know what we can do to change anything.
Well, I think...
I mean, tell me, because I'll do it.
Okay, ready? Taking notes. I think you just said something really important. Not that you haven't before, but just specific to the conversation at hand. We cannot count on the government. We cannot count on the Democrats in power. We cannot count on a lot of individual Democratic politicians. We can't count on the system. But that is not an excuse for an action. It's not an excuse for despondency. It's not an excuse for being demoralized. And I've felt all of those things, so I understand it. I'm not pretending that that's not a normal human reaction to feeling like the entire deck is stacked against you. And worse, the people who should be fighting for you aren't. That's our call to action. It is up to us. It's up to us.
Wait, you're talking me off the ledge this week? What the hell is this?
Well, because something shifted in the last couple of weeks. I've always understood the threat. We've all always understood the threat. Some of us, and what's interesting, what I've been thinking about a lot of, we've all thought about it from very different perspectives, and we've all come to the same conclusion. You know, whether it's historical or psychological or sociological or political, what have you. We've all come to the same conclusion, and we came to that conclusion a long time ago, that we're in very dangerous territory here. But what we couldn't know is just how many forces are aligned against us. And somehow, I guess it was, you know, the fact that Donald manipulated the media so easily with one lie just reinforced the extent to which the media is not an ally. The media is not doing its job. The media is a huge part of the problem. The failure of the indictments shows us that if the system isn't broken, it is on life support. And the fact that he was allowed to hold this rally in Waco is evidence that just not enough people in positions of power are understanding the threat seriously, or they just don't fucking care. We have to care. We have no other choice but to care. American history is replete with stories about individuals in the most dire circumstances with no power at all giving their lives to try to affect positive change. It would feel disrespectful to those people who gave everything to give up, because generally speaking, I mean, I know things are hard for everybody. They really are. But, you know, some of us have privilege. We have resources. We have platforms. The idea of giving up, the idea of getting just being too fucking tired to keep going is untenable. So when I saw that rally, when I saw the reaction to it, when you know, we all looked into just how terrifying the symbolism and the enthusiasm and the increased mania and also the expanding perspective. In other words, like, it's not just Donald using his charisma. Sorry to use the word. It's not just Donald using his charisma to suck people in. It's, as Dahlia pointed out, Donald using apocalyptic language, Donald using religiosity, Donald using anti-government, like amping up the anti-government rhetoric. So I think we need to understand that this is a multi-front war, and we need to be fighting on every single one of those fronts. And sometimes that means getting into the streets. Sometimes it means using mockery. We need to take Donald seriously, but you know what? He is just one of the worst, most absurd people on the planet, and he's a loser. And we need to point that out time and time again. He's a loser. We need to counter program his rallies. We do. We need to come out when they come out. We need to come out with 10 times as many people as they get. Anything we can think of to do, we need to do it. So for those watching, this is not permission for you to say, oh, okay, Danielle and Dahlia and Jen and Mary have got our backs, so we're going on vacation. And I'm not pretending that everybody's going on vacation. I know everybody works hard. Everybody works hard. Absolutely. But it's just a reminder, like, all of us here have many more than one job, you know? So we all do. Like, we all have lives. We have relationships. Some of us have kids. You know, we all have stuff going on too. So if you can carve out time to get in the fight, because this is not a passive fight. It cannot be a passive fight, because as Donald made very, very clear, and I think he said it explicitly, they are coming for us. And I hope that I get to be in the same cell block as you guys at Guantanamo. But I also would prefer not to go to Guantanamo. So I just want to give each of you a chance to... I just rambled, I apologize. But to give you guys a chance to end on a you know, maybe... if not optimistic, at least productive note, so that we all feel a little bit less, I don't know. I mean, honestly, I am feeling quite overwhelmed, and I'm feeling quite, I never feel hopeless, but I definitely feel like Sisyphus a lot of times. So Danielle?
I mean, I'll just say, one, you did not ramble. You spoke in a way that spoke for all of the ways that we're feeling. I tweeted yesterday before I went to bed a meditation that I have been doing on Insight Timer for overwhelm and despair. Because, look, I want to feel my feelings because they're fucking real. Yeah. Right? Like, we should be sad. We should be grief stricken. We should be worried. We should be concerned. But as my mother has always said to me, you cannot allow those fears to paralyze you. You just can't, right? Like each and every single one of us, regardless of the size of the platforms that we have or the followers that we have, need to do something because we live in this country. We need to do something. We need to take action. It isn't enough to just watch these shows or be on social media and be passive. If it means calling up your members, other members that aren't your representatives, because your representatives actually give a that don't. If it means organizing a walkout, if it means organizing a protest, we have got to take action because we are losing our country every single fucking day that we sit by and we watch Donald Trump and we watch these Republicans run roughshod over this country. It's our country too, and we need to fight for it.
Jen?
I just want my day job back. I mean, Sam Bankman-Fried has just been accused of trying to bribe the Chinese government or a Chinese bank so he can get, you know, money out unfrozen. That's the kind of stuff I want to be covering.
Okay.
No, but what I'm saying is we are, when something like that, when a major meltdown and really interesting sort of international intrigue involving the, you know, a crypto bro child of privilege is not like the main story because things are burning. That's distressing to me. You know, I was actually hoping that I could be back to my regular white collar crime following gig and not dealing with this. But, you know, I have to always remind myself it's not over. I don't get a break. And I just want to say this other thing. During your uncle's presidency, I was never sleeping through the night. And then sometime in the spring after the insurrection was over, I don't know, I started sleeping again. Well, that's not happening anymore. I'm awake. I'm up. You know, where are my 2 a.m. peeps? Because I'm awake. I don't know about you all. Yeah. Okay. So that's a sign. That's a litmus test.
Yeah. And actually, I think it's a really good point. If this motivates you all out there, think about what's been taken away from you. Think about what you don't have the bandwidth to enjoy or the energy to participate in. You know, I've said this many times, as I'm sure all of you have in one way or another. It is untenable for every single election to be about the survival of democracy or the rise of fascism. It is untenable. We cannot live, at least not with joy, productive lives if we're trying to do that against that backdrop. Dahlia?
So I want to actually lift up something you said, Mary, which is it is extremely unfair to say, you know, people should be doing more because everybody is exhausted, right? And I think maybe the better frame goes to the frogs in pots problem. Like people should be feeling more. Yeah. And I think that one of the things that we've all been lamenting on this show is that, you know, we're so numb after all the shootings that we don't realize this is how our children live now, that this is what our children have normalized. Like I look at my kids and I cannot believe they've been doing active shooter and lockdown drills since they were toddlers and that they think that's normal. And like, either of my sons can tell you exactly what to do when you're in the boys' bathroom and somebody comes in shooting and where you hide your legs. That's what we've lost, you know? And so I think maybe, you know, I completely agreed with Danielle saying like, why are we not doing more? But I wanna say layered over that, because I know everybody's exhausted, is why are we not feeling more? How have we become capable of seeing what happened in Waco and just saying like, oh, well, now let's turn to, you know, whatever award show is coming up next, because like that makes me feel things, right? Ted Lasso makes me feel things. And I get that. I get that. But I think that the depletion that you're hearing isn't just fatigue from being sleepless at 2 a.m. or not knowing what to do, which you are right about too, Jen. But I think it's also the, we have gotten to the point where we are so incapable of outrage that things like Waco happen and we just move on.
Yeah. And last point I'll make is that there, you know, there are legitimate reasons for not wanting to feel certain things. I don't know if you all remember. I'm guessing you do. Just the absolute terror we felt at the beginning of COVID. It is an awful way. Fear, that kind of abject terror, is an awful thing to feel. And again, that was after 2.5 years of a vile, dangerous, enraging, and horrifying presidency. Right? So we, and I do this a lot because it is one of the main substances. No. What's that word? Wow, that's fascinating that I just forgot the word. Symptoms, thank you, of complex PTSD is detachment. But what I would say to all of you is that if you detach from the bad stuff, the good stuff also gets very muted. And it doesn't feed your soul the way it would otherwise. So all the more reason to engage, even though it's difficult, because you will be more engaged in everything. So doesn't mean it's easy, but I love all of you. Thank you for being here and there for me in life. And for making the hard stuff worth engaging. And so, Danielle Moody, Dahlia Lithwick, Jen Tab, thank you all so much, and hopefully I'll see you next week. Well, that was hard. Jesus. But there are very few people. Well, actually, I don't know if there's anybody I'd rather be going through the hard stuff with than my nerd Avengers. So thank you again, Dahlia Lithwick, Danielle Moody, Jen Taub, for being here. Thank you to all of you who watched. And we will be back on Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, at youtube.com/politicon. And House of Horrors is going to be on a case-by-case basis. So it's not going to be weekly anymore. Because, you know, it turns out that there's not always something going on in the house that deserves its own show. But we will have, you know, if there are hearings, we will live stream. And if anything of note happens in the House of Representatives, we will have an emergency session, House of Horrors. So stay tuned for that. And of course, we'll be back next Tuesday for the Nerd Avengers. That's at 12 p.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, also at youtube.com/politicon. And when you go to Politicon's YouTube page, if you click on the bell, you can subscribe, and that way you'll be notified every time a new episode or video drops. And of course, you can, if you're watching the show after it already aired, you can leave a comment, you can like the episode, that helps too. And you can listen to all the shows in podcast form on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. Please keep giving us 5-star reviews. It's really helpful. And we appreciate it. It definitely helps other people find the show. And again, to anybody who hasn't heard, we are taking the show on the road. The Mary Trump Show with the Nerd Avengers will be in Chicago on May 7th, And then in Portland, Oregon on May 9th, San Francisco, May 10th, and in my hometown of New York City on May 16th. So please go to, and you can see on the Chiron, well, not anymore. Well, now you can see where to get the tickets. Go to politicon.com/tour, politicon.com/tour. We would absolutely love to see you there. I'm telling you, it is going to be an absolute blast. So get your tickets while they are still available. It's not that too far in the future. I'll keep reminding you, but spread the word. Again, that's May 7th, House of Blues in Chicago. May 9th, Cobb's Comedy Club. Oh, I got the date wrong. It's the 9th is San Francisco. The 10th is the Aladdin Theater in Portland, Oregon. And the 16th of May is the Gramercy Theater in New York City. That's all in May. May 7th, Chicago. May 9th, San Francisco. May 10th, Portland, Oregon. And May 16th, New York City. That is it for today. I hope you guys are okay. That was very, very rough. You know, we have to have these conversations, and we need to keep having these conversations and get more people to listen to these conversations, and we need to act. It's just a question to figure out how to be most effective. All right. I'll see you guys Thursday, 7 o'clock Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. In the meantime, please stay safe and be kind.